Welcome to the EU Startups Podcast. Sit back and enjoy the show hosted by Marcin Lewandowski.
This episode of EU Startups Podcast is brought to you by Vanta. Are you building a business? Achieving compliance with frameworks like ISO 27001 and SOC 2 can help you win bigger deals, enter new markets, and deepen trust with customers. But this can also cost you real time and money. Vanta automates up to 90% of the work for the most in-demand frameworks, helping businesses get compliant quickly. And with over 300 integrations, you can easily monitor and secure the tools your businesses rely on. Join over 7,000 fast-growing companies that use Vanta to manage risk and prove security in real time. To learn more about how Vanta works and to get 20% off, visit vanta.com/EU Startups. That's vanta.com/EU Startups. Now, kick back and enjoy the show. Hey everyone, this is Marcin Lewandowski and you're listening to the EU Startups Podcast. My guest today is Dirk Horrig, the co-founder and CEO of Commerce Tools. Dirk is a creator of headless commerce and pioneer with cloud software in the enterprise market. Commerce Tools provides the most flexibility and scalability commerce platform, enabling hundreds of brands and retailers to create commerce possibilities that had not been possible before. Everyone, give it up for Dirk Horrig. Lovely to have you on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me here. Looking forward to the conversation.
Amazing. Dirk, so you've been a trailblazer in the e-commerce space, moving from SaaS to PaaS. What inspired this transition and how has it reshaped the way brands approach e-commerce?
So when we started Commerce Tools, we'd basically seen a change in the market for more than 10 years, right? So I would call the beginning of e-commerce the year 95 probably. So 94, 95 was when internet adoption started to increase. We saw more and more web stores, company like Amazon started to come up. And then companies thought about, don't we need a software to enable us to sell something online? Mm-hmm. And that was for more than almost 15 years. Stayed the same. And then in 2007, the iPhone came to market. Mobile internet penetration started to increase. 2 years later, the iPad came to the market. And we believe that we will see a fundamental shift in society where we come from one device, which had been a clunky computer in your household with a huge monitor that also occupied a lot of space. This moved a little bit to laptops, but then we got mobile devices, smartphones increased, and we believe that the internet will be everywhere. New applications are coming out, and shopping, therefore, will look different. And the solutions that we built before to enable these web shops now need to provide something that we call unified shopping experience. No matter what touch points comes up, if it might be voice, in the car, in the store, wherever, we needed a different approach. And this e-commerce everywhere was then the inspiration where we thought, okay, we might need to rethink enterprise software again from scratch to reflect that change in the market and the impact that it will have to brands, retailers, and manufacturers to respond to that.
Awesome. Dirk, so as the co-founder of Commerce Tools, you know, what was the vision you had when you started the company and how has that vision evolved over time?
Yeah, so the first idea was to provide a core commerce platform, a core commerce engine out of the cloud that can enable e-commerce everywhere, right? So, and therefore the first years, the focus had been on building out this platform and making that or giving customers the opportunity to launch outstanding shopping experiences on that. If we look at Commerce Tools today, and as we had been growing significantly over the last 10 years, it now became beyond the platform business, a multi-product offering. So today we are giving companies all of the components that they can build and run shopping experiences on any device and touch point. Might it be B2C, B2B, B2C2C, B2B2C, with a lot of automotive brands that are doing e-commerce in the car. You can upgrade the car while you're driving. So it expanded to a multi-product offering from this, at the beginning, more narrowed core platform idea.
Awesome. And Commerce Tools is known for its headless commerce approach. Can you explain what this means and why it's become crucial for businesses to, you know, in today's digital landscape?
Yeah, and this headless, it might be misleading because the head in technology was described just as the visual layer. So what you see when you visit a website or when you open an app. So basically the buttons and nice images and the functionality then is the body. What we described with the approach early on was to solve a problem that more and more companies ran into as the environment started to change more and more quickly to them. Brands today need to make changes to their customer experience multiple times a day, either because of their consumers request something, because they have new marketing ideas, because there's a challenges from competitors in the market and they want to stay ahead. So you need to up-level your game constantly on a daily basis.
Right.
But in past technology, that became tricky because the solutions that we built 20 years ago to launch commerce sites did not have the requirement that you had to change anything. So from 2000 to 2007, you did not need to make any technical change on your website. And now suddenly we're living in a world where nobody knows what is the device of the future anymore, right? So will the Apple Vision Pro be the thing where we all buy things in 5 years or not 5 years, in 5 months, or maybe not, or is there some other device coming out? So you need to respond fast. And let me give one quick example here that I often like to use. A few years ago, Best Buy, so US online retailer, one of the largest in the world, in the top 10 of online retail in the US market. So Best Buy wanted to move the add to cart button a few pixels because their internal design agency said if you do that, it will likely increase the conversion rate a little bit. And that's a very small change. So for everybody who's listening here, who has a rough understanding of HTML and CSS, you would say, oh, well, after a cup of coffee, I'm done with that. So call me in an hour and I have done that change. It took Best Buy 9 months, included more than 60 people full time, cost them more than $1.5 million. It's all publicly documented. The CTO brought a book out about this whole scenario. But that was all the good news. The bad news was they could not have made any other change to their website at the same time. And we talk here about one of the largest e-com sites in the world with hundreds of engineers, well-skilled. The problem was that the system that they had been built and extended over 15 years became so complex and nobody could make a change anymore. They had 250 different versions of the product detail page, no testing environment anymore, and so on. And why was that? When it had been implemented, the idea was not that you make changes on a daily basis, but then Best Buy, the world moved forward. Yeah. Now things are constantly changing. You needed to adapt. So what we developed our company for was giving companies the agility and flexibility and scalability that they can make these changes quickly. If you need a boat today, then you can build a boat. If the boat should become a train, then you can make it a train. If it needs to be a plane, you can make it a plane. So having it working like Lego blocks, and as what we could not have foreseen is that the world even becomes more fast-pacing and volatile. And I think everybody, because of COVID and so on, and other, in a different context, has heard about resilience, building resilience. We actually created Commerce Tools in our platform for business resilience, because the only way how you can have resilience is that you are flexible to adapt to environmental changes. And in that case, environmental changes to the economic market, to the consumer behavior, to the buying behavior, to technologies. And we want to give them that toolkit that makes their digital business future-proof.
Right.
And that's what headless on the approach is basically solving.
Nice. Thank you for this masterclass, Dirk. Actually, Commerce Tools, you know, it sounds like the Swiss Army knife of e-commerce.
Yep.
Offering incredible flexibility and scalability. You've worked with a diverse range of clients, from SMEs to global players like AT&T, Lululemon, and BMW. What are the challenges you've observed among these clients, and how does Commerce Tools tailor its solutions to address their needs?
Yeah. So at first, I have to say that literally every company that we have worked with and that I've seen over the last years they all identified their challenges, right? So often from a consumer perspective, we wonder about, okay, why is company A or company B not doing this? This is so obvious, right? So when you talk to them, they also know that it's obvious, right? So why is the store not allowing click and collect? Why do I need to wait so long in line at the POS counter? Why is the loading page on my website so long? So it's not that they don't know about that. They just realized because of just the pace of change, that everything that they've built over the years, it's not so easy to change. And everybody who's working in a larger organization knows that, A, you have the people change management process that you need to take care of, but often there are legacy systems running that are 30, 40 years old that can be a backbone of specific functionality. So it's easier for some startups or younger companies to implement changes than for successful long-term companies. And the overall challenges that we see today, we always categorize them in three buckets. The first one is flexibility. And flexibility can mean, hey, we need to make so many changes on our website. It's outdated. Consumers are maybe complaining often. So the intent here is to increase conversion rate. It's very expensive to attract new customers. So you would like to incentivize them to come more often to your site and buy again. For that, you need to implement specific functionalities. And that might take too much time. And this is adding up. Or you want to launch a new business model. You think about, okay, maybe I need to reinvent my company for the next century. Let's not just do what we have done the last 100 years and digitalize it. Let's now come up with new ideas. And so that's adding up. And that's what I mean with flexibility. So they have a lot of ideas, but technology is hindering them on rolling things out quickly. And I don't know. I don't want to name large enterprise players here. I think everybody knows them. Mm-hmm. It's not, they hadn't been built that your own team can make changes there. Often you need to learn a specific programming language, a specific framework. The onboarding time for internal people often can be up to a year until they can be really productive. And we all know that talent is hard to find these days. So we try to develop something that is programming language agnostic, that can be onboarded within a few days, where everybody can make changes on the technical layer quickly, right? So Amazon is doing a change every second. We want all our customers to be able to operate like Amazon, right? So then they can define, does it need to be every second, or is maybe four times a day enough? Mm-hmm. But, and I can tell you, for most companies, even those that are doing 4, 5, 6 billion on revenue, they even do hard on making one change a year on the systems that they have. So I just had been at visiting a couple of companies on the East Coast last week, and it's always the same pain point. The second pain point is scalability. And scalability, we often think about, okay, there's these big events like Black Friday, Cyber Monday, then you have these high traffic peaks. And yes, that's true. For that, you need to prepare. And having a true cloud platform that has the underlying elasticity from the hyperscalers that we are using allows to scale up and down seamlessly. Even when there's surprise traffic coming to the platform, sometimes not every event is being planned, and you might have more traffic than you expected. But the bigger challenge often for companies these days is that they've been growing maybe from 300 million to 500 million online, or at least the category of enterprise players that we are serving. Yeah. And that's not so easy for them to scale anymore. And because it's not just on, oh, let's buy a larger database or let's book a couple of servers on AWS or GCP. It often requires them to make technical changes to the existing software. And as we provide a true cloud native product, we help them to overcome that scalability topic. And then the last and probably most shocking part is often up to 70% of the IT department budget just goes on keeping the lights on. It's on maintenance, it's on upgrades, it's on versioning. And when you think about that, you could free some of these costs, that this could go to innovation and help on providing better customer experience, doing some of these things that you all the time wanted to do, that your customers are asking for, would also significantly help them. And it's so a lot of these kind of things, but at the end, I would say it comes always down to these three segments.
Crazy. Generally, you know, with a background in developing and launching online stores, you've seen the e-commerce space evolve drastically. Like, what are some of the biggest changes you've witnessed, and you know, how has e-commerce tools adapted to stay agile? And actually, yeah, you were talking about it a bit more, you know, agile in response to emerging trends and customers' demands.
Yeah, I think the biggest change overall, I would say that we all as shoppers are significantly more enabled and digitally educated today than the digital shopper 20 years ago. Right? Yeah. And you can see, I would say all of us, when we go to a store, and I not mean when we just randomly want to have inspirational shopping or walking through the streets, but for example, if you know, hey, I need a new TV for my house, all of us are probably better informed than the store associate is wherever you walk to, because you have all of the information just within your hand, right? So you can access, you get comparisons, you can watch product videos and so on. So the buyer today is significantly more impatient, educated, and demanding than ever before. And potentially the young people that are now, I don't know, 10, 15 years old, when they are 25, they will be significantly more enabled than the generation today is, just because of the access on information. But that puts a lot of challenges to the companies out there, because they are not growing and developing as fast as the individual is that is just now growing up with generative AI natively, and will demand complete different things in 5 to 6 years, where companies are not yet even prepared for. So I think that's the biggest change if we look back. From a technology perspective, I think the one point that I already mentioned was the pass from, oh, we are desktop PCs in the office and maybe at home, and now everybody has a computer either on their wrist, right? So even the smart watches that we have are more powerful than most desktop PCs that we had been using 20 years ago. And that change on the device world, plus the infrastructure development. So from on-premise servers that you needed to host yourself to managed hosting, cloud, and then the evolution of cloud to the hyperscalers today, had been the, I would say, fundamental enablement layer to make a lot of these things possible that we're using today.
Derek, you know, as a seasoned entrepreneur, you've weathered the storms of startup life. Your entrepreneurial journey began in 2002 when you started your first company out of university. So, you know, what are some of the most valuable lessons you learned during those years? And what's one piece of advice you wish you could go back to and, you know, give yourself when you were just starting out?
Yeah, good question. I'm curious to hear from you if that overlaps with other answers that you got to that question from other entrepreneurs. The most valuable lesson, and I also think one of the most important skill sets from my perspective, is not giving up. And it's at least also what I hear across successful founders. And with successful founders, I don't mean, hey, I built a company and I've been lucky I could sell it after 2 years, right? So these stories also exist, but it's not reflecting the majority of successful outcomes. If we look at the NASDAQ, if we look at, I don't know, the companies that became big over the last 10, 15 years, all of them had multiple near-death experiences, and all of them had scenarios where nobody wanted to fund them, where customers did not pay, where things did not work out, where just things went south unexpectedly, and it's significantly harder than expected, because it's a marathon that you have to run at a sprint speed, I would say, to a certain extent. And building large companies often takes more than 10 years of time. And you have ups and downs, and constantly ups and downs, where you wonder, hey, why am I actually doing it? right? So why I'm not just now, I don't know, go surfing to the beach or whatever I would like to do, is it really worth it? And this not giving up in these kind of moments and saying, okay, we're getting this done, it's definitely probably the most critical path or experience that you need to go through for at least long-term success. And that's maybe also the advice, I'm not sure if it's advice or feedback, right? So having the confidence that most likely it will all get well, right? So it will not get well on its own. So you just cannot rest and you will be all right. It will be tough. Yes, it will be annoying. But there are more people than you think that also went through that, because from the outside it always looks easy because you just see the success part, right? So you see in sports somebody winning, but you are not seeing when this person was getting up every day in the morning at 5 a.m. and had been training 8 hours and had, I don't know, bleeding knees and so on. So that's a part that you don't see to get there. You just see that kind of snapshot. And the overlap from my perspective is there is a big group that suffered and went through the same. So nobody is alone on that path, though you still need to walk alone on getting there, but there are enough peers to connect to. And that's maybe the advice on you will be all right in most cases. It's just a little bit tougher than you might have expected.
Actually, it does overlap with other people's answers, other entrepreneurs' answers. Like one of the answers that was really cool and stuck with me that I recently heard from one of the entrepreneurs I was interviewing was that she ran a marathon in New York some years ago, and then she realized that, you know, if you keep going, not giving up, and just put one foot ahead of other, you will finish the marathon sooner or later. So you just gotta keep going. You can't you didn't give up, and it's all about kind of perseverance and this drive that actually...
And of course, you need to hire a lot of great people. Of course, you need to figure out product market fit. So there are a lot of things that you have to do. But at the end, the tricky part is not... So as you said, it's one step after another. You cannot walk all of these 10,000 steps within 1 second. Mm-hmm. And there will be steps that are not so much fun and where it's easy to just break out.
Dirk, let's switch gears for a moment and talk about downtime. How do you unwind and recharge outside of the office? Any hobbies or guilty pleasures you'd like to share with our audience?
Yeah, I think first the most important part is family, right? So I have amazing, challenging but fun 3 kids at home, and that's a good contrast, right? So with all of that traveling and with all of that CEO life, and it's when I'm at home, I feel like I have nothing to say. So it's often a big kind of contrast on running a global company and I don't know, being negotiating a big customer contract, and then 5 minutes later is, why is the dishwasher not done yet, right? So that's a similar kind of life, I think, that we share, all of us. But that puts things in a better perspective and contrast, and also let you switch topics quickly in your brain, right? So that you don't carry the work all of the time with you. Yeah. And the other thing is sports, right? So might it be with the family? We are all pretty active. If it's water sports, I don't know, surfing or being on the weekend, just on a boat, like mountain bike, and played volleyball a long time. Now I'm getting a little bit old and it's becoming less, but whatever. Yeah. So all types of activities, mostly outdoors, lots of sports, and spending time with the family, is what, helps me to unwind and recharge, outside of work.
Nice. I can relate to that. I have the same feeling at home, especially with my daughter, like I have no say over anything whatsoever. She owns me. Like, it's just follow whatever she wants, whenever she says. So yeah, it's a funny thing. They say behind every successful CEO is a great support team or a support system. Who are the unsung heroes in your life or career journey? And how have they helped shape your path to success?
Yep. So, at first, of course, there's a lot of amazing colleagues always, right? So that are doing all of the work and in a company. But when I look at it, I think this is what you mean with the question, who probably outside of the core company team is being supported. There was always in the phases of building a company had been people in there who engaged. Might it be that they invested early on and believed that they had opened up contacts, that they had you winning the first customer on making you an introduction to their CEO. And for us, it was, if I would call out a few people that I have in mind, the early days, we had the former HP CEO, Wolfgang. Hey, Wolfgang, long time no speak. Not sure if you're listening. Who early on, right? So that had been helping us with a lot of contacts out of his network, setting up the company, giving advice, being a sounding board. Then little later on, once the business started to grow, especially Robert and Chris, they are both C-level executives at Rewe, so one of the largest German companies, Grocer. Both are still serving on my board, actually, now since 10 years. I think this year's celebration is coming up as I'm thinking loud about that. So 10-year anniversary will be that they're serving on my board and had been tremendously helpful over the years, and especially in the first years where the business had been small, I mean, a million plus, right? So now it's a 150 million plus company, but at that time, believing in the business, supporting us, helping us with winning customers and so on, and putting a lot of time and energy in the back, and ever been there when we needed them, but also left us enough space to make our own errors and mistakes, I would say. So it's then definitely today, also other board members, I would say in the last years, I see the company life in phases. So there's a pre-revenue building the business, then had been, okay, let's get from a million to 10, 20 million. And then over the last years, as the company had been growing to where it is today, now I would say that all of my board, investors, shareholders, always try to be helpful when we need somebody or something, asking for an introduction, ask for a different perspective, especially Doug. So to call him out here, had been helpful on the go-to-market side on scaling the company globally, as he has done that in various C-level roles, both on private and public companies before in the US, always helpful. And last but not least, and I think this is maybe every company also needs these, the first customers and partners who believe in you, where it's a chicken and egg kind of issue, right? So nobody wants to be the first one. And as we're running their digital commerce business and most of their revenue then is enabled through us, you want it to work because otherwise their business is in trouble. And those who early on relied on us, the Carhartts, for example, is one of those customers that we are now working with since over 10 years on our platform successfully, that came to us. So these early customers that doubled down and that also took a risk on saying, hey, no, we believe in the product, we believe in the company, it's early on. And as well as the partner ecosystem around it, that you need to support it, that said, hey, no, we also invest into that business and build capabilities around it. That's the probably unsung heroes, or that you don't see so often.
Right, that
help over time to make it big. Yeah, there are. It's we're now 14 years in the market, right? So and takes time, different phases, and it's of course changing, right? So somebody who has been helping at the beginning is maybe not as helpful anymore today because they have a different kind of focus, but that makes them all similarly relevant because it's. Here again, it's step by step, and you need different people on the journey helping you.
Cool, Dirk. We can't let you go without a fun question. If you could trade places with anyone for a day, who would it be and why?
I don't know. The obvious ones is like that everyone could say, oh, it must be amazing to have one day in the life of Mark Zuckerberg or Elon Musk just to see what they are doing. I still probably wouldn't pick it. I probably would honestly pick one of my kids because I would curious to see the world out of their days, right? So how's it in school, second or third grade today? How's it playing, I don't know, soccer or the sports that they're doing with the others? So we're already so settled in the world and have put everything into a box and into a framework, how we understand it. Yeah, but they see it fresh, right? So on having this fresh view again, out of their perspective, I think would probably what I would be most curious about.
Great answer. I love it. I love it. I'd probably, like, now that I think about it, I'd probably do the same. Like, I would love to see the world, like, with my daughter's eyes. It would be so cool.
Yeah, and maybe it's also because, and I'm in now the lucky position that I'm able to meet a lot of people. So, though I have not spent time with both Elon or Mark yet, but there are a lot of other very interesting people that you then get to know over time. And I also assume you via the podcast and other activities. So, my feeling is that I'm having a good view of that size of the world now into people who are running large companies and having a lot of impact. So it makes me less curious, but I think it's more interesting what you could learn and see with somebody who's just 3, 4, 5, 6 years old.
Amazing. Derek, so to end it off, what's next for Commerce Tools? Can you give us a sneak peek into, you know, any upcoming innovations or initiatives?
I can give a sneak peek on something where we're at the moment experimenting. Nothing yet that we're fully announcing, but that therefore that might be more exciting. We believe that it's also time to revolutionize the in-store experience. From my perspective, it's broken. As a shopper, I see that unified. If I like a brand or a product, I might buy it online. If there's a store around, if I'm at the airport, they have a flagship store there. I just purchase this over there. But I want to have a similar, and with similar, I mean seamlessly perfect working experience. And especially the POS is broken. It might be different for everybody here, but if I go and buy something in the store, on average, my wait time at the POS is longer than the time that I need in the store. I'm also a very spontaneous and fast buyer. So if I know I want something, I just pick it out of the shelf and then I immediately run to the POS. I'm not spending much time and hanging out in the store. So I think my spend ratio is quite good related to the time spent that I have. And it's still 20, 30 year old technology. None of us want to stand in line and wait just to pay, right? And then things are not working. Or do you have an account with us? Then you need to give them your email. Then they try to sign this in. Then when you log in at home because you figure out who you want to return it, you don't find it in your online account because the POS system and the e-commerce system is little, so it's not the same system and they haven't connected it. So there are a lot of challenges. And what we are at the moment investigating is how can we enable our enterprise customers with a unified experience that easier integrates into the POS and also takes, we believe in a POS-less world where the store associate today is more like an e-commerce associate in the future. And you can check out with everybody everywhere in the store and giving it a much better experience and not having checkout such a bad experience as it is today. So we're investigating and investing also more into in-store capabilities with our platform and tooling at the moment to try to figure out what is the best way we can help our customers to uplevel the experience there.
Awesome. Derek, such a pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you so much for your time. I enjoyed the conversation a lot. All the best, and I'll talk to you soon.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me here.
Ciao.